to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden years. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and mystery coming up in this hour. Later on, the adventures of Sherlock Holmes, new ones from 1945, but first, the adventures of Nero Wolfe. This episode first aired on the 2nd of February, 1951 on NBC, called The Case of the Vanishing Shells.
Ladies and gentlemen, the ringing of that phone bell means mystery, adventure.
Nero Wolfe's office, Archie Goodwin speaking. Mr. Wolfe? No, he isn't. Huh? Oh, well, for you, maybe he is.
I'm not here.
Oh, yes, yeah, he's always here.
I've gone out.
No, no, he seldom ever goes out.
I won't start on anything tonight.
Oh, sure, he'd love to start on a case tonight. What's your name? Oh, that's a beautiful name. Address?
Archie, it's another woman. Hang up.
No, no, no. Honest, I'm not Mr. Wolfe, but I'm his agent. Yeah, I'll be right over, miss. Goodbye.
What's her trouble? Where are you going?
Well, she said she's received some threatening notes and she's afraid to leave her hotel. So long, boss.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's that genius who is the bulkiest, bulkiest, most ponderous, and most brilliant detective in the world. Yes, none other than that chair-borne mass of unpredictable intellect, Nero Wolfe. Created by Rex Stout and brought to you in a new series of adventures over this NBC network in the person of Mr. Sidney Greenstreet.
Prefer to call tonight's story The Case of the Vanishing Shells. It didn't seem to be difficult at first, but, well, I'm not a stupid individual, but so often I allow myself to become mesmerized by beautiful women. Heaven bless them. Doris Murray was such a woman. She phoned us first late one afternoon about 5 o'clock, then again at 5:30.
Very well, Mr. Goodwin, but I would prefer to see Mr. Wolfe.
Well, I said I'd be there at 6, Miss Murray.
I don't want to talk any longer on the phone. Please hurry. There's someone at the door.
I'll see you in the cocktail lounge at your hotel.
At 6 o'clock. That's half an hour. Don't fail. Who is it?
Emil Stoner.
Oh, come in, Emil. You got my call, darling. Here, let me take your briefcase.
I'll just put it here on the piano, Doris.
Oh, I'm terribly upset about those threatening notes, darling. I know it's upset you, too, but I'm determined to find out who it is. I'm not going to let them bluff me out of my first chance to play the star part in one of your shows.
But look, Doris, there's that other part.
Is that all I mean to you? Well, what can they divulge that'll harm us? What?
Several things. And I can't afford... I mean, at this time...
You're frightened, Emil.
Doris, I'm going to give the star part to Paula.
Paula? You've been divorced for 4 years. Why?
Because I feel she
can... play it better. Is that what you're going to say? Well, I can act rings around her.
Now, look, Doris. I know it's a big disappointment to you, but that's the way it is.
Get out. Get out! Go on across the hall to Paula. Give her the part. Louse up your show. She and that playwright of hers. Get out, Emil.
But, Doris...
You frightened little... Get out!
I believe, Mr. Wolfe, you're making a great mistake in not coming along.
Indeed. I'm sure that what attracts you could not possibly be of interest to me.
A gal needs help. Money is money.
Girls, money. Fooey.
Yeah, well, we could have dinner out for a change. They have one of the finest chefs in town at that hotel.
You're most impolite. I'm trying to read this book.
Poetry.
Archie.
Yes, sir?
Shut up.
But we need money. That filthy green cabbage is necessary to our existence. This may be a tough case, you know.
You're sufficiently intelligent. Sometimes.
If I sat around like you do, I'd weigh 500 pounds, too.
How'd you leave the room? Besides, it's only 300.
What a way to run a business. Orchids, beer, books.
Don't keep the charming client waiting.
Okay, I'm going.
And always remember, there is a telephone.
Oh.
Thank you, waiter. Oh, good evening, Miss Moray. I'm Archie Goodwin.
Well, I didn't expect... please sit down.
Well, I think I should explain the absence of Nero Wolfe. There's so much of him that it's not too convenient to transport it about. I do all the outside work.
And I'm sure you do it well.
Well, you know, some women call me Goodwin and some call me Mr. Goodwin and,
Yes?
The unattached call me Archie.
Hello, Archie.
Oh, splendid. I'm glad to hear it. Now we can get right down to the nasty old business that's troubling you, Doris.
Well, first, here's the $500 retainer fee.
Well, thank you. Now, what's the note about?
Well, there are two notes, both printed by hand.
Uh-huh.
Oh, will you hand me my purse, please?
Oh, sure.
Thank you.
Oh, I see. Doris Moray. If you fail to withdraw from the cast of Stoner's next production by start of rehearsals Monday, both you and Stoner will have a blasted reputation and perhaps other injuries from which you will be unable to recover.
The other one is like it, only more vehement.
Someone or a group of someones are intent on keeping you out of Stoner's shows, huh? It's too bad. His next one is said to be a sure smash hit and a star-making part for the leading woman.
Yes, Emil Stoner wants me to play it. He's been planning on it ever since David Banning wrote the play.
What does David Banning think of you playing the part?
Well, I don't think he's too enthused about it. You see, Mr. Stoner and Paula Kenyon have been divorced for 4 years, but she has continued to be his top leading woman. Now she's engaged to David Banning, who wrote this play.
Oh? Makes things a bit difficult?
Well, of course, Rick Hunter, Stoner's director, is...
Hunter's somewhat in favor of your playing the part.
Well, Rick Hunter is very fond of my work.
And very fond of you as well, huh?
Yes, unfortunately. I like Rick Hunter tremendously, but Emil Stoner has been of greater interest to me. In fact, we're more or less engaged, Mr. Goodwin.
Oh, well, had any words lately with the ex-Mrs. Stoner? Paula Kenyon, is that her name?
Paula and I were great friends when I first joined the Stoner Productions, but I don't know, I don't think she appreciated the fact that Mr. Stoner and Rick Hunter, the director, took such an interest in me.
Tell me, did you ever think you were in love with Rick Hunter?
Yes, at first I was thrilled by his artistic imagination. And then as time went on, I realized that he was subject to melancholia. Mr. Stoner was more stable, and I needed someone older to advise me.
Well, what's wrong with your reputation and Mr. Stoner's?
Well, there's nothing I fear, but I'm afraid Mr. Stoner is somewhat disturbed by these threats. He feels there's something in his past of sufficient import to really harm him. I think it's nonsense.
Well, then what we have to do is uncover this person or persons before you end up with ruined careers on Broadway. Where does the ex-Mrs. Stoner live?
Well, as a matter of fact, she lives just down the hall from me. Lived here for years.
Oh, well, I think it's advisable, honey, that you stay close to your room until we solve this thing.
Oh, but I'm not afraid for my life, Archie.
No? Well, I am. I'll see you into your room, Doris.
Oh, now, please, Mr. Goodwin, if you...
Oh, you don't trust the boy, huh?
Well, I...
Such beautiful eyes.
Why?
Lovely red hair. Yeah. You could have the lead in my new play. I never wrote one, but for you, I'll try anything.
Come along.
Here's your bag.
Well, hello, Doris.
Oh, hello, Rick. Mr. Goodwin, this is Rick Hunter.
Hiya, Hunter. Nice shows you've been putting on.
I've just been admiring your work, Goodwin.
Oh, well, that's nice. I'm glad. Nothing like encouragement for a beginner, Mr. Hunter.
You're ready for the big time from what I saw. Heard from Emil Stoner today, Doris?
I talked to him once this morning. Have you been sitting in the cocktail lounge all afternoon?
Yeah. That I have, honey. I want to see you play that lead, baby. And I think I just about got it all settled.
Dreaming about it won't settle it. Liquor never accomplished anything in itself, Rick. Come on, Mr. Goodwin.
He's a very jealous man, Doris. In fact, right now, I can feel his thoughts piercing me between the shoulder blades. Oh, excuse me. Here's a phone book.
Yes, Archie?
How do you know it's Archie?
I felt the time was exactly right for you to call.
I wish you felt it was time to earn some money.
Is this a worthwhile case?
Well, she's a beautiful redhead, and,
That, of course, makes it very worthwhile.
Yeah, well, I got $500 as a retainer.
Fooey, a pittance, and probably all you'll ever get.
What do you mean by that?
She's probably guilty.
Now, look, boss, she's the victim. Received notes threatening her reputation and her health if she plays the star part in Emil Stoner's new production. Also, they threatened Emil Stoner likewise. The playwright, Dave Banning, is engaged to Paula Kenyon. Incidentally, she lives here at the hotel, too, just down the hall from Doris.
I remember her. And the playwright wants Paula Kenyon to play the part. Well, Archie, you have only the beginning. It is probably too late to prevent whatever is going to happen.
Like what, for instance?
Have you found a body yet? Call me after you find the body.
What body? There's no body.
But there will be, Archie. There's always a body where you are concerned. Either a body beautiful or a dead one. Bye.
Thanks for seeing me to my room, Archie.
Oh, I'm not stopping here, Doris. I'll take a look inside.
But I'm not...
Oh, I insist. Part of my job, you know. If I fail to take every precaution, Mr. Wolf would never... Well, look in that chair.
Emil?
Emil Stoner? Oh, three red dots on his shirt front. Doris, hold on.
I'm all right. Yes, I'm all right.
All right, sit down. That's it. Now, let's see. The body's still warm. What's this crumpled in his left hand? A horoscope. Between the fingers of his right hand, an unlit cigarette. Monogram PK.
Paula Kenyon.
This horoscope is for March. Something he picked up from your desk here?
I don't believe in astrology.
Where'd he get this cigarette with Paula Kenyon's monogram?
Oh, poor Emil. I didn't believe anyone would really harm us. Why was I so stubborn?
When did you see him last?
I saw him this morning. I'm so shocked I can hardly think clearly.
Doris, there's a briefcase here on the piano with a newspaper on top of it.
What? Oh, it is, yes. It's Emil's. He must have left it here this morning.
That's strange. Emil Stoner was bald, but...
But what?
Well, I'm sure he's a man who always wore a hat, but I see no hat.
He must have come up the elevator as I went down to meet you.
Who would know he'd come up here? The director, Rick Hunter, he said he'd been in a bar all afternoon. What else was it he said? Thought he had everything just about settled.
Oh, no, Rick couldn't. He just... Oh, Mr. Goodwin, I couldn't believe that.
I can believe anything about anybody. I learned that the hard way. In my book, everybody's guilty until proved otherwise. Even you, baby.
What?
Even you. A Herald Tribune newspaper. Are you sure you haven't seen him since this morning, Doris?
What are you doing? Absolutely nothing. Someone came in here and shot him. Called the police. I insist. Maybe I did leave my door unlocked. Why did I do that?
Well, they couldn't have opened the door otherwise, could he?
No.
Give me the check room, please. Oh, hello. Do you know Mr. Emil Stoner, the producer? You do? Well, tell me, did he check his hat with you this afternoon or this evening? He didn't, huh? All right, thanks. He must have carried it up here to this floor. Doris, do you have a gun?
I own a gun. A small 25 automatic. But it's not here.
Where is it?
I had the handle repaired, and it's been in my dressing room for a week or two.
I hate to do this, Doris, but I'm going to move the body away from the back of that chair. There. Yeah, three wounds. One bullet went through the upper part of the chest, out the middle of the back. I'd say right through the heart. By the angle of the wound, he was shot while sitting down.
Please, Mr. Goodwin, must we stay here?
I want to give this room a thorough going over. We'll go down to the lobby. I want to use that phone booth again. And, Doris, I hope...
I know what you're going to say. You hope that gun of mine...
is still in your dressing room at the theater.
Neil Wolf speaking.
Oh, Mr. Wolf, may I have your autograph? I'm taking a correspondence course in how to be a detective, and I think you're a wizard.
That's so kind of you to say so. Why are you calling from a phone booth?
What? Who said I was?
It's obvious. There's no room tone reverberation.
Well, you shouldn't have to ask. You know everything before it happened.
You found the body then. Happened just before you got there.
Oh, now look, I took the girl up to her room to be sure it was safe for her to go in, and... Okay. And there, sitting in a big leather chair, was Emil Stoner. Shot three times with a small caliber gun, dead about an hour. One shot went through the body from the upper part of the chest to the middle of the back. Therefore, he was shot while sitting down. The killer was standing, huh?
I'm listening.
Oh. Well, his left hand was clutching a horoscope folder, and between the index and second finger of the right hand was an unlit cigarette with a monogram on it, PK. Emil Stoner is bald, but there was no hat in the room. However, on the piano was his briefcase, and on top of it, a 4 o'clock afternoon edition of the Herald Tribune.
Better look in the briefcase, Archie. No weapon?
No weapon. But Doris Murray says she owns a 25 caliber automatic and it's in her dressing room at the theater. Also, she claims she hadn't seen Stoner since this morning.
You found no empty shells about the floor?
None.
What did you do with the bullet?
What bullet?
The one which passed through his chest and lodged in the back of the leather chair. Are you there?
Boss, I'm a very stupid fella.
Stop bragging. The bullet.
Boss, there ain't no hole in the back of that chair. I just realized it. Maybe he was standing up. Then the killer must have been on stilts.
Archie, let us pretend, only pretend, that you're very observant. Now proceed to Paula Kenyon's apartment, just down the hall, you said, and see what she knows without divulging the fact that Stoner is dead, and look sharp.
My gears must be slipping.
Archie, do you know what great event will be celebrated tomorrow?
Yeah, my birthday. When'd you get me?
Cuthbert's correspondence detective course in 4 easy lessons. Bye.
This is Paula's apartment.
No answer. Let's see if it's open. Ah, there's no one inside. Come on in. Now, look, if anyone walks in on us, we found the door open and we just came in to wait,
which
huh?
is the truth, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Ah, here on the desk we have a stack of horoscope stars and a box of Paula's monogrammed cigarettes.
Mr. Goodwin.
Huh?
This is Amos Gray fedora hat.
Then he was in this apartment this afternoon. What are you staring at? Oh, small pearl-handled automatic.
Yes.
25 caliber. Yeah, it's been fired very recently. We won't touch it now. Does it look like yours?
Archie, it is mine.
Your initials?
I found old Jenkins, the stage doorman at the theater, to look in my dressing room, and... well, my gun isn't there.
Did you leave the gun out in plain view in the dressing room?
Yes, for several days anyway. Then I put it behind the mirror.
I suppose many people have seen it, though.
I'm sure.
I hope, Doris, that your fingerprints are not the only ones on that gun.
If they use my gun to shoot him in my apartment, why would they bring the gun back here and leave it in plain sight?
Maybe they didn't do it just that way.
No?
His hat's here, the gun is here, and yet he's dead in your apartment.
How can you answer that?
Well, maybe he was sitting here waiting for Paula, and someone called him out and over to your place and shot him. Ah, that's no good. Doesn't make sense. Now, if he was sitting in this chair here and someone entered that door, hey.
What is it?
Look in the chair back. Huh? Little round hole. Start looking for some empty shells around here.
You find something?
No, I want to make a call. He was shot with this automatic. 3 shells were ejected. I certainly vanished.
Yeah, Wolf speaking.
Archie, I'm at Paula Kenyon's. She's not here. Found his hat, a stack of horoscopes on the desk, box of monogrammed cigarettes, a 25 automatic which belongs to Miss Moray, recently fired, but not an empty shell in sight. No blood, but a single small hole in the back of the chair near the desk. Doris Moray is with me.
I'll call Inspector Kramer now about the body and have ballistics check the bullets with the gun.
And the bullet in the chair back?
Did you find anything of particular importance in Amos Turner's briefcase?
Yes, I found...
Never mind. Bring the girl here at once.
Okay, boss. Say, don't you think I'd better wait for Paula Kenyon? Uh-oh, here she is. Bye.
Bring it along, too, if you can. Goodbye.
Hello, Paula.
Well, Doris, what are you doing here? I wasn't aware that I left the door unlocked.
Seems to be contagious this evening. I left mine unlocked, too. Hello, Dave. Miss Kenyon, Mr. Goodwin.
Hello, Doris.
Hello.
Archie, this is Dave Banning, the playwright.
How are you, Mr. Banning?
How do you do?
I've heard all about your new play, and I wanted to meet you. Doris thought you might be over here, and the door was ajar, so we, well...
I just walked in. I hope you don't mind, Paula.
Certainly not. I'm used to people just walking in.
We were here a while ago and went down to the cocktail lounge for a while.
When is the play open, or have you cast it yet?
Mr. Stoner handles that part of it. Are you a prospective investor, Goodwin?
Oh, I've had a number of flings in the business. Matter of fact, I expect to see Mr. Stoner tonight.
You do?
Tonight? Here? I don't understand. What's this fencing all about? Doris, you're not just visiting me. We've hardly spoken for... Oh.
Is that your gun, Miss Kenyon?
It's yours, Doris.
Yes, that's right, Paula. It was in my dressing room.
When did you see Mr. Stoner last?
I haven't seen him today.
I had lunch with him. Why?
What hat did he wear at lunchtime, Mr. Banning?
Why, the gray fedora.
How did it get here? That's Amos. What is this? What are you two doing here?
Where is Amos? Come on, cut out the melodramatics.
Mr. Stoner is dead.
He's what? Paula.
And without any further explanation, I shall have to ask you to accompany me downtown.
Police?
If you will, please.
They're still in the front room, boss. I'll bring them into your office when you're ready.
Yes, R.J., I'm sure they're all anxious to talk. They've been sitting there for an hour now.
Maybe we ought to make some sort of explanation to them, huh?
Why? This sort of technique should work very well in this particular instance.
Yeah, but I don't know about that director, Rick Hunter. He may be difficult.
Does anyone know that you found the completed and signed contract in the briefcase?
No one.
Mm-hmm. Good. Now we have the threat notes, the contract, the afternoon newspaper, the briefcase, the fedora hat, the gun, no ejected shells, the holoscope, the cigarette, and the two chairs. One with a small hole in it.
Come in.
Ah, Inspector Kramer at last. What have you?
Well, we covered every inch of that place and didn't find a single empty shell. There were two bullets in the body and the one that passed through him into the chair back in Paula Kenyon's place. They were all three fired from Doris Murray's little automatic.
Any fingerprints on the gun?
None but Doris Murray's.
Not unexpected, to say the least.
The bullet that was lodged in the chair in Paula's place went through his heart. Now, he was apparently shot in her room, but...
But how did he get into Doris Murray's place? I'll be able to explain that when we locate those three empty shells, Inspector. Bring our guests in, Archie.
Come in, please. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Nero Wolfe. Miss Paula Kenyon.
Hello.
Miss Doris Murray.
Hello. Mm-hmm.
Rick Hunter, the director.
How do you do?
David Banning, the playwright.
How do you do?
Won't you be seated, please? May I present Inspector Kramer of Homicide?
How do you do, Inspector? Yeah.
Mr. Wolfe has asked you here to give such details as you recall, which might be of assistance to him in the solution of the murder of Emil Stoner.
Mr. Hunter, as the director, whom did you favor as the star of your next production?
Why, Doris Murray.
You have been deeply interested in Miss Murray?
Hasn't done me much good.
But you do love her?
I do.
And you are deeply interested in the progress of her career?
I am, most assuredly.
Did you know that Mr. Stoner had made out and signed a contract for a certain woman to play the lead in the new show?
No.
You knew that Doris Murray had a gun in her dressing room?
Yes.
You were in the hotel cocktail lounge all afternoon until you met Doris and Mr. Goodwin?
Yes.
And you could have seen Emil Stoner enter the lobby and go to the elevator?
I could.
Could you prove that you never left the cocktail lounge until you met Doris and Archie?
Maybe not.
Did you see Mr. Stoner go into the elevator?
I did.
Mr. Banning, you wrote the new play. Were you in favor of Miss Murray playing the part?
Why, no. I felt Paula Kenyon was better suited for it.
You and Miss Kenyon are engaged to be married?
Yes.
Anything happened to Mr. Stoner, you as next in line could assign the role as you saw fit.
That's correct.
Did you know that Mr. Stoner had made a final decision on the part?
I did not.
He didn't tell you anything about it at lunch today?
No, I made a strong plea for Paula.
You know about the gun in Miss Murray's dressing room?
Everyone did, apparently.
Very well. Miss Kenyon, did Emil Stoner visit your apartment often?
Not often. We were not on too friendly terms.
Did you phone him to visit you this afternoon?
No, who said I did?
No one? I merely asked. Were you, by any chance, still in love with Emil Stoner?
Now, see here, I don't appreciate that kind
of
talk.
Just relax, Mr. Banning.
I was not in love with Mr. Stoner. That was over.
You and Doris Murray were at one time very friendly.
Yes. Well, I found out how two-faced she was. Emil was a fool to fall for her, but you couldn't tell him anything. All she's interested in is a career.
You're not interested in your career, Miss Kenyon.
Well, yes, in a way.
You wanted the star part. You phoned Stoner this morning.
Yes, but he said he was going to give it to her.
You knew about Doris's gun?
No,
I didn't. You recognized it immediately, boss.
Well, yes, I knew. What if I did?
Then you wrote these threatening notes to Miss Murray.
I did not.
You didn't know the contract had already been signed?
No.
And you still had a motive to kill him?
I wrote those notes. She had nothing to do with it. You can check them on my typewriter.
We know, Mr. Banning. We've already done it.
I know how it looks, but Paula didn't do it. I knew he was coming to her place. I called him. I knew Paula was out. I did it.
If so, what did you do with the ejected shells?
I threw them away.
How many?
Three.
Oh, no, David, please don't.
I don't believe you, Mr. Banning. Miss Murray, did you know the contract had been made out and signed?
No.
You're lying, Miss Murray. You said you didn't see Stoner this afternoon.
I didn't.
You called him and asked him to visit you. You did get the threat notes and they frightened you. But you didn't know they would frighten Stoner.
I did not phone him, nor did I see him.
Yes, you did. His briefcase was on the piano. And he was there in the late afternoon because he brought with him a 4 o'clock edition of the Herald Tribune.
What if he was there? I didn't kill him.
He told you then about his decision. He left Halliday. Forgot the briefcase and went to Paula's apartment to wait for her.
That's not true. That's not true.
Filled with rage, you got your gun, which you said had disappeared from your dressing room. Then calmly put it into your bag, walked across the hall, and shot him as he sat reading a horoscope.
No, no, no.
Archie, her handbag. Thank you. Notice. I run my finger through a hole in the corner. She fired through the bag. And see, three empty shells.
No!
And here's a contract made out to Paula Kenyon. Too bad, Miss Murray.
Well, that's a good day's work, boss.
Some beer, Archie.
Right. Say, tell me, how did Stoner, if he was shot in Paula's room, get back to Doris's room? She couldn't carry him.
Oh, now, Archie, that's not too difficult. He walked.
Shot through the heart? Impossible.
That's a fallacy, Archie. Official medical records show that people have walked a block in such instances.
No wonder Doris was so shocked when she saw him back in her room.
The shooting took place after she called us, and it seemed unbelievable that anyone would leave the gun and not the ejected shells. Ergo, the gun must have been concealed when fired.
Yeah. Paula would have no reason to do that, because she was in her own apartment.
And these men are not the type who would have fired through their coats.
And Doris, before she started down the hall, would naturally conceal the gun, huh?
In her handbag. Where else?
Boss, midnight. It's another day. I'm a year older.
Yes. Cuthbert's correspondence detective course in four easy lessons. Happy birthday, Archie.
You have been listening to The New Adventures of Nero Wolfe, starring Sidney Greenstreet.
The Adventures of Nero Wolfe on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC broadcast from February 2nd, 1951. You're listening to an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. On November 12th, 1945, in a column published by Eleanor Roosevelt, she wrote, "I have been asked to emphasize two phases of the present bond drive. One is expressed in the slogan, 'Victory bonds are Thanksgiving bonds.' Parents and relatives who buy these bonds may do so and feel they are expressing their gratitude that their menfolk are now safe from the actual dangers of fighting. Between now and Thanksgiving Day, therefore, we can all feel that this is one way in which we can actually help to make possible, through buying these bonds, the things which we owe to the men who have won the war for us." And it was 4 days after Thanksgiving in 1945 that The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes was broadcast from the Paramount Theater in Hollywood as part of a victory bond drive. This episode from November 26th of that year, with Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce, starring in the case of the accidental murderess.
This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. And now for the weekly visit with our good friend and host, Dr. Watson. Tonight, we find him on the stage of the Paramount Theater in Hollywood. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Bartell. If you've bought a victory bond, you're welcome.
I have, Doctor. Now, what's the recipe for tonight's new Sherlock Holmes adventure?
Well, now, let me see. Take equal parts of beautiful English countryside and black villainy. Mix them, add a dash of romance, a sprinkling of danger. Season well with the usual theatrical condiments, and you have the case of the accidental murderess.
Sounds like a tasty dish. How did the story begin, Doctor?
On a beautiful summer day in 1895, Holmes had just concluded his famous investigation of the sudden death of Cardinal Tosca, an inquiry which was carried out at the express desire of His Holiness the Pope. And in consequence, the great man felt that a couple of weeks' rest in the heart of Warwickshire would be a pleasant change after our rather strenuous adventures in Italy. And so, Mr. Bartell, we went to Stratford-on-Avon.
Oh, the home of Shakespeare, huh?
Quite right, my boy. As a matter of fact, that was the reason that decided us to go there. Holmes was a great lover of the drama, you know. And at the time my story begins, the Shakespearean festival was in full swing. For the first week, our life there was calm and peaceful. During the daytime, we visited the local places of interest, such as Anne Hathaway's cottage and Shakespeare's birthplace. And the evenings found us at the theater. It was on a Tuesday, I remember, during our second week's stay, that the trouble began. Holmes and I had gone for a walk through the nearby forest of Avon. He was in unusually good spirits that morning, and there was a distinct twinkle in his eye as he said...
Watson, for once I begin to wish that I were a man of wealth.
Oh, and what makes you say that, Holmes?
The beauty of this place, old fellow. I'm perfectly certain I'd be happy in retirement here. It's rather depressing to think that in a week or two, the sordid necessity of making money will demand my return to Baker Street in a world of criminals.
No, I must say that in an environment like this, it is a little hard to think of crime. How does the old saying go? Where every prospect pleases, and only man is vile.
Yes, but Shakespeare puts it even better, old chap.
Oh, really? What's he say?
Well, surely you remember the speech in As You Like It. We saw the production 2 nights ago.
Oh, I don't remember the speech. How did it go?
In this setting, it's really remarkably apposite. Are not these woods more free from peril than the envious court? Here feel we but the penalty of Adam, the season's difference. Don't you remember? Sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head. And this our life, exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything. I would not change it.
Upon my soul, you read that much better than the fellow on the stage the other night.
Don't tell me I adopted the wrong profession, Watson. Oh, dear me, wait a minute. Path seems to end here. Nothing but dense trees ahead of us.
There's another path over there. I think it leads down to the river.
Then let's follow it. The Avon is always...
Great Scott, that was a... Holmes! Holmes, you hurt?
Yes, I think I am. Bullet hit my shoulder. I think it's only grazed it.
Well, get off your coat quickly. Let's have a look.
It's only a scratch. First, let's find out where it was fired from. I heard the thud of a bullet in the tree behind me. Yes, here we are. Give me a penknife, old fellow, will you?
There you are.
Thanks.
Do you suppose that shot was deliberate?
Well, I can't imagine someone mistaking me for a rabbit, Watson. By the way, there was a curious echo to that shot. I don't know whether you noticed it. Uh-huh. Here's the bullet. Now, let me see. I was standing there. A line from this bullet hole in the tree through the spot where I was standing would indicate that the shot was fired from that cluster of trees over there. Come on, Watson. Let's see what a search discloses.
I wish you'd let me look at that shoulder before you start galloping all over the countryside, Holmes. You're bleeding quite profusely.
Oh, plenty of time to look at it when we... Hello. Look over there.
A man and woman running towards us across the clearing.
Yes, and carrying guns.
Yes, it looks as if it was an accident after all.
Was anyone hurt?
Yes, sir. My friend was hit in the shoulder.
Oh, how dreadful. It's not a bad wound, is it?
Oh, it's only a scratch, madam, I hope.
But the blood on your coat.
Well... Just, how did this accident happen, sir?
Well, we were out rabbit shooting. I was teaching my wife to use a rifle.
I saw a rabbit scurry across the clearing. I raised the rifle and fired. It seemed to me, Geoffrey, that as I did so, you jolted my arm.
Yes, I'm afraid I did, Alice. I was going to fire too, but as I raised my rifle, I jolted your elbow and sent your shot wild. I can't tell you how sorry I am, sir. Here's my card. Of course, we'll take care of any expenses that may be entailed.
Well, the first thing to do is to find out how much damage has been done. You'd better take your coat off, old fellow.
I don't think I can.
Oh, he's badly hurt.
No, it's just that...
Oh, the man's fainted.
Oh, this is dreadful. I have a horse and trap down the road.
Excellent. Give me a hand with him, will you? I must get him to a hospital as fast as possible. Holmes, are you feeling any better?
Has the nurse gone?
Yes. She's bringing the house surgeon.
And the man and his wife?
They're down in the hospital waiting room.
Oh.
I found out their name. It's Markham.
Then we're alone.
Yes, 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 old fellow.
In that case, I can start behaving as if I were at death's door.
Holmes, you mean that you shammed that collapse just now?
Yes, yes, I did, Watson. Spare me a little pity, old chap. My shoulder's confoundedly painful, I assure you.
I'm sure it is. But what made you pretend to faint?
I recognized this Mrs. Markham, and I think she recognized me. It's important she assume I'm out of action for a while.
Oh?
Mrs. Markham.
Why?
Well, Mrs. Markham is, in reality, the notorious Mrs. Dangerfield. You remember the Dangerfield case?
The Dangerfield? Great Scott, yes. She was tried for the murder of her husband by poisoning, wasn't she?
Yes, she was, old fellow. She was acquitted when the jury decided she was an habitual arsenic addict who happened to take an accidental overdose.
Well, didn't you have some connection with the case? Yes.
It was I who tracked down the sale of the arsenic she claimed to have bought for cosmetic purposes.
Well, if you ask me, that shot at you was no accident.
Oh, of course it wasn't. I'm certain that I was recognized. In any case, her record is a bad one. Prior to her husband's death, there was an episode in which her uncle was killed in a shooting accident on a grouse moor in Scotland. An uncle who left her a large fortune on his death.
And I suppose Mrs. Dangerfield was a member of the shooting party when the accident happened.
Yes, she was. Now, she's something of a femme fatale, Watson. I must plan my actions very cautiously. I'm up against a dangerous opponent.
Well, you'll have to stay in the hospital until your wound's being examined and dressed.
That's true, old fellow. And while the local staff are taking care of that, I want you to shadow the Markhams.
Of course I will, Holmes.
Stick close to them, old fellow. Make them believe that I'm going to be kept here for some days. Find out as much as you can and then report to me.
Right, I'll do my best. It's awfully kind of you, Mrs. Markham, to insist on having me back to your house for lunch.
My dear Dr. Watson, after injuring the famous Mr. Holmes, it's the least I could do.
Of course it is.
Geoffrey, dear, will you bring us some sherry? It's Ada's day off, you know.
Really well, Alice. Is anyone else coming to lunch?
Only Dennis Romney.
Oh, Lord, that fellow seems to live here. We might as well have a drink. You'll find it'll help making this actor fellow more tolerable.
I take it, Mr. Markham, that you're not an admirer of Mr. Dennis Romney's.
Can't bear him. He's always quoting Shakespeare and behaving generally as if he were another Irving. Oh, he's got Alice completely fooled. Here's a glass, Doctor.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
Dennis, I want to introduce you to Dr. Watson.
How do you do, Mr. Romney?
How do you do, sir? Hello, Geoffrey.
Want a glass of sherry?
Thanks. That'd be very nice. Are you a disciple of the theater, Dr. Watson?
Well, hardly a disciple, sir, but I've been attending the festival during the last week. I enjoyed your performances immensely, if I may say so.
Oh, you may say so, Doctor.
And what play are you appearing in tonight, Mr. Romney?
King Lear. I shall once again portray the thankless role of the King of France.
Dear me.
That incredibly bad actor, Basil Grant, tears a multitude of passions to tatters in his rendition of Lear. Oh, horrible, horrible, most horrible.
I thought his Hamlet was atrocious last night, Dennis.
Wasn't it? When he came to his final line, the rest is silence. It was as much as I could do to prevent cheering.
I felt rather the same way when you were killed in the duel, Dennis.
Oh, Geoffrey, you're being intolerably rude. Why don't you take Dr. Watson upstairs and show him your butterfly collection? Then at least you'll know what you're talking about.
Are you interested in butterflies, Doctor? I have quite a rare collection.
Oh, really? I'd like to see them very much.
Come on, then. I think we've just got time before lunch.
Try and bring yourself down with a few better manners, Geoffrey, dear.
I'm really quite an easygoing man, Doctor, but the arrogance of that fellow Romney infuriates me.
Well, I must say, he does seem to have rather a good opinion of himself.
Don't put too much weight on that balcony rail. It's absolutely full of wormholes. Part of the attraction of an old house, my wife tells me. But I regard it as confoundedly dangerous. Yeah, and this is my little museum. In these cases, I think you'll find some of the finest specimens of Lepidoptera you've ever seen. It's my hobby, and I may say that, with the exception of the Natural History Museum, I doubt if you'll find a finer collection.
It must have taken you years to collect them.
It has. Many years, many disappointments, and a great deal of patience. Look at this fella. He's my prize specimen, a North American monarch.
North American monarch? Beautiful, beautiful.
Isn't he?
Tell me, Mr. Markham, when you captured a butterfly, how did you kill it without marking it in any way?
With poison.
Oh? What poison?
Cyanide.
Not arsenic?
You heard me say cyanide, Doctor.
The only reason I mention it is that a friend of mine collected butterflies once, and I'm certain that he always used arsenic to kill them.
Why'd you keep talking of arsenic? You're trying to hint at something.
Oh, no, no, my dear fellow. I was just curious, that's all.
Yes. A trifle too curious, perhaps. There's the luncheon gong. Let's go downstairs again.
Ah, so, man, I didn't mean to offend you.
Oh, of course you didn't. But my nerves are a little on edge today. Must be that accident to your friend that's upset him. I really must get that balcony rail mended.
Shh. What is it, sir?
My wife and young Romney. They're going into lunch. Listen.
But darling, why won't he understand?
Oh, how could you expect him to, Jeffrey? Jeffrey has no imagination. He's never understood
me. Well, Doctor, they say that listeners never hear good of themselves. You know, sometimes I wonder if my wife wouldn't like me out of the way. Let's go down to lunch, shall we?
And so, Holmes, that's the story up to now.
A very interesting one too, Watson. So you think that Mrs. Markham is planning to kill her husband, eh?
Oh, it's obvious. She's in love with the actor fellow, Dennis Romney. Her husband's in the way, and if she doesn't want to use poison this time, there's a perfect setting for murder in that crumbling balustrade on the landing.
Mm-hmm.
One push when he wasn't looking, and it'd be the end of him. And no one could prove that she did it.
A charming household. And Mr. Markham became very evasive, you say, when you mentioned arsenic.
Yes. I said it deliberately, of course, to see how he'd react. If you ask me, he knows that his wife has arsenic in the house. He was trying to protect her.
You've exerted your charm sufficiently to arrange to see them again, I trust.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I have. They're taking a picnic tea and going boating on the Avon this afternoon. They asked me to join them. Of course, I agreed. I just rushed back here to the hospital to report to you first.
You've done splendidly, Watson, splendidly.
Oh, thanks so much, Owen. I've been so busy telling you what I've found out that I haven't asked you about you. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm fine, old fellow, fine.
What did the house surgeon discover?
A very interesting fact. Look in the drawer beside my bed, will you?
Great Scott, it's a bullet.
A bullet that the house surgeon removed from my shoulder.
But we found a bullet in the tree also.
Precisely. Therefore, two bullets were fired.
But, good Lord, that means...
It means, old chap, that we have a dangerous task ahead of us. Not to solve a murder, but to prevent one.
We left you at Sherlock Holmes' bedside in the hospital. Did the picnic with Mr. and Mrs. Markham prove an exciting one?
No, it was rather unpleasant, as a matter of fact. The three of them kept squabbling all the time, and just as we were coming home, something unforeseen occurred. Mr. Markham fell into the river.
Well, pardon the old question, Doctor, but did he fall or was he pushed?
It was hard for me to say. I had my back to him when he fell. Of course, we fished him out and rattled him back home in a trap as fast as we could. He changed his clothes at once, and as we sat round the fire a little later, I could see that he'd caught a chill. In fact, I recommended that he go to bed and stay there. Mrs. Markham agreed with me.
Jeffrey, dear, I do wish you'd follow Dr. Watson's advice and go to bed.
For the fifth time, Alice, I will not go to bed. I'm perfectly all right. No, it's no thanks to you and Dennis.
And what do you mean by that remark, Geoffrey?
You know perfectly well what I mean. It wasn't an accident that I fell in the river just now. One of you two pushed me when I was struggling with the punt pole in the long reeds.
Geoffrey, you're talking rubbish.
Am I? You were in the boat, Dr. Watson. Didn't you see what happened?
No, I didn't, sir. My back was turned to you when you fell in.
Well, then we'll call it an accident. An accident that happened by a curious coincidence, just where the river is deepest and the reeds thickest.
Geoffrey, I don't like your tone. You can accuse me of anything you like, but when you start suggesting that Alice...
If you don't like the way I talk to my wife, I suggest that you don't come to my house. I'm going to get a scarf. I'm chilly.
Dr. Watson, I must apologize for my husband's behavior. I don't know what's come over.
Oh, that's quite all right, Mrs. Markham. I quite understand.
Well, I wish I did. I don't mind him yelling at me, but he's being so abominably rude to you, Alice. The last couple of weeks, it's been getting worse than ever.
I know. Ever since we had that argument about the insurance policies, he's been unbearable.
Insurance?
Yes, Doctor. We took out quite large policies on each other's lives recently.
You didn't tell me that, Alice.
Well, it was his idea. And yet, when the insurance man came here,
You'd have thought I was forcing him into taking out the policy.
Insurance? Great Scott, I...
You what, Doctor?
Nothing, Mr. Markham. Nothing at all.
Sounds as if you don't approve of insurance, sir.
Oh, it's not that, Romney. It's just that I...
Who can that be? I wasn't expecting anyone. Answer the door, Dennis, will you?
Yes. Sounds as if Jeffrey has already done so.
Alice, we have a visitor.
Holmes, you shouldn't be up.
Good evening, Mrs. Markham. Hello, Watson.
Well, I'm delighted to see you, Mr. Holmes. Though I understood from your friend that you'd be in the hospital for several days.
The constitution of an ox and the obstinacy of a mule, two characteristics of mine, have combined in making possible an early departure from the hospital. How do you do, Mr. Romney? I think I've seen you at the theater. My name is Sherlock Holmes.
How do you do, sir?
You'll stay to supper, I hope.
If it's not inconvenient, Mrs. Markham.
Of course it isn't. I'll go in and arrange for it.
Upon my soul, Holmes, I'm glad to see you.
And are you, old fellow? Let's take a stroll on the terrace, shall we? It's rather warm inside this evening.
You can go out through the French windows.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Markham.
Holmes, are you quite sure that you're well enough to go walking about?
Of course I am. You must tell me, Watson, what the latest developments are. In the meantime, I myself have not been idle. Yes, Watson, I think our stage is set, and I have a feeling that I may contribute to a rather dramatic last act curtain.
A delightful meal, Mrs. Markham.
Oh, well, thank you, Doctor. Mr. Holmes, you're not eating very much.
My appetite is a trifle jaded. The mental fencing that we have indulged in during the meal has been somewhat disturbing.
I don't understand you.
Oh, come now, madam. I know that you were once Mrs. Dangerfield, and you know that I know it. Why keep up the pretense any longer?
Very well, Mr. Holmes. But we needn't converse in lowered voices. I'm sure that you've told Dr. Watson whatever there is to know, and perhaps more.
I admire your courage, madam.
Geoffrey, Dennis.
Yes, Ellen.
I want you to listen to this. Mr. Sherlock Holmes knows that I was once Mrs. Dangerfield. He's apparently under the impression that this is a dark secret of mine. Mr. Holmes, Geoffrey knew and loved me before I ever married Mr. Dangerfield.
Of course I did, Holmes.
He stood by me during the horrible trial after my first husband's death. And I told Dennis about the whole miserable business months ago. So I really don't see that you've uncovered any great secret.
Not yet, Mrs. Markham, but I have a feeling that it's only a matter of moments.
So you haven't got any secrets from Dennis either, eh?
There's no need to shout, Geoffrey.
And there's no need for Dennis to be in my house. Get out, Romney, and stay out. This business between you and Alice has gone far enough.
I'll go when Alice tells me to.
Well, if you won't go, then I'm not going to sit here. I'm going upstairs.
You're shaking like a leaf, sir. You've got a fever. Don't you think you'd better go to bed?
Mind your own business and leave me alone.
Mrs. Markham, I really think you should persuade your husband to go upstairs and lie down.
Don't worry, Mr. Holmes. I know how to handle him. I'll take him up. Put an arm around my shoulder, Geoffrey. Come along.
We should follow them, Holmes. They have to pass that crumbling banister on the landing. With him in that state, she might try to...
What are you suggesting,
Shh,
Doctor?
Shh.
Come and watch, both of you. We can observe them both from the foot of the stairs here.
They're on the landing. She's on the outside. Look, 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 look. Markham stumbled against her. He's pushed her against the railings. Look out!
Geoffrey, be careful!
Come on, up the stairs!
Alice, are you all right?
Yes, but Geoffrey tried to push me through the railing.
That's a lie.
No, it isn't, sir. The three of us were watching you from below.
But the railing held. I don't understand.
I can explain that, Watson. This afternoon, while you were all at your picnic, I came here with a local carpenter. You had informed me, old fellow, that it was the maid's day off, and I took the liberty of reinforcing that decaying woodwork.
What the blazes do you think you've been up to, Holmes?
Preventing murder, sir, and finding the true solution to the Dangerfield case.
What do you mean, Mr. Holmes? The true solution?
Surely it's obvious to you, Mrs. Markham. You have told us that your present husband loved you before you married Mr. Dangerfield. It was he who accidentally killed your uncle so that you might inherit a fortune. It was he who accidentally gave your first husband an overdose of arsenic. Arsenic that he obtained for the purpose of destroying butterflies.
Yes, yes, yes. It was he who tried to send you to your death by pushing you through those railings. And all the time, Mrs. Markham, I thought that you were the potential murderer.
You fellows have got hold of the wrong end of the stick. All I've been trying to do is to conceal the fact that my wife was a murderess.
Geoffrey, how can you say that?
Markham, if you were...
Just a moment, Mr. Romney. I'm not through with him yet.
This talk is all very dramatic, Mr. Holmes, but I wonder how you're going to be able to prove it.
Dr. Watson, Mr. Romney, and I will testify to the attempt that you've just made on Mrs. Markham's life.
Yes, and what about the attempt on your life, Holmes? Obviously, it was Markham who fired at you in the woods.
But my wife has already admitted firing the shot.
True, sir, but two shots were fired. The one that your wife fired, we found in the tree. The one that you fired was extracted from my shoulder in the hospital.
Then the two shots were fired simultaneously.
You remember, Watson, that I commented at the time on a curious echo. Mrs. Markham told us that her arm was jolted as she pulled the trigger. That was when the other rifle was fired. Mr. Markham didn't want me on the scene when he staged his latest accident, and so he tried to kill me.
What kind of a devil have I been living with all these years?
I think I'm going to kill you, Markham.
Don't come near me. Keep him away from me.
Leave him to the law courts, Mr. Romney. British justice may be slow, as indeed it was in the Dangerfield case, but in the long run, it is sure. You'll find that out, Mr. Markham, on the gallows.
Tell me, Doctor, did Mr. Markham finally end on the gallows?
Yes, he did. And it might interest you to know that Mrs. Markham and Dennis Romney were married. A nice chap and a fine actor, that boy.
Well, Dr. Watson, what new Sherlock Holmes story are you going to tell us next week?
Well, now, let me see. Next week, Mr. Bartell, I'm going to tell you an exciting adventure Holmes and I had in North Africa. It begins at the headquarters of the Foreign Legion and ends with a strange death in the Cafe of a Thousand Sighs. I call the story Murder in the Casbah.
The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 26th of November, 1945 on Mutual. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.